Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
Hey, listener, are you happy with your current chicken wings? Do you wish you had something a little saucier? If you answered yes, then it might be time for you to break up with your old chicken wings and get a new honey. Lemon pepper wing from Popeyes. Share the wings with your friends so they can see it's time to move on, too. Head to Popeyes and get 6-piece honey lemon pepper wings for $5.99. At participating U.S. restaurants, price may vary.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest edition of the Pro Basketball Talk podcast here at NBC Sports. I'm Kurt Heelan, managing editor of NBC Sports NBA page, with you as always. And today, well, we're taking your questions. You guys are setting the tone for the show. There's a lot of Knicks up front. We're going to talk with Tommy Beer, who covers the Knicks for Forbes magazine, as well as writes for Roto World here at NBC Sports. Plus, we're going to take your questions on a variety of other things. Why are we even wasting time on anything else? Let's just get to this and bring in Tommy. How's it going, Tommy?
Doing pretty good. A little start of the season, got plenty to talk about. We got enough little sample size to have some good discussions and also plenty to look forward to. So I certainly can't complain.
Yeah, I think we've reached that point in the season. I mean, it's still early, but you've reached a point where, you know, we're 10, 12 games in, around 10 for most teams. The statistics have a little weight. You can start to put, I mean, yeah, look, there's some flukes out there and some stuff will come back to earth or other teams will catch up. But in general, you're starting to, like, there's some, at least some weight to everything. You kind of see what the flash in the pans are, what's going to fade, what's not. You can kind of get a sense of things now.
Absolutely. You know, we kind of have the everything we expected, like Andrew Wiggins being the best player in the NBA, you know, that's been true. But yes, as you mentioned, there's still certainly some cases for things to kind of level themselves off. But I think for the most part, what we see is kind of, again, can have some validity to it and certainly makes for some interesting talking points.
It does. We're going to start with your team, the team you covered and talk with for Forbes out there, the beloved New York Knicks. Tommy, I guess my first question is WTF.
Yeah, that sounds about right. And I think that's the $70 million question. I of course don't have the answer to. But every year, 10 or so games in, there's some fluctuation and some teams and some surprises, but it seems every year, about 10 games in or so, for the at least for this century, I won't speak to last century, but for this century, the Knicks have been one of the teams at or near the bottom of the standings, and this year has been no different. They've increased the drama a little bit this season by already having a coach on the hot seat and general managers and presidents speaking to the assembled press corps immediately following blowout losses to the Cavs at home. So yes, we have plenty of drama, which is certainly almost always the case, and plenty of losses, which is par for the course as well.
Let's start with this. I find it interesting, you know, look, first off, and this has been said by a lot of people, it's not just me, but I was thinking it when it happened. When Steve Mills and Scott Perry were up, you know, in front of the media after a game at Madison Square Garden recently, I'm like, that got ordered. Like, nobody walks out and does that post-game, GMs and team presidents. That was ordered by Dolan. We know that they talked at half. That I just think that had to go down that way. It leads me to this sense that, and I think this is true among Knicks fans, but look, I expect fans, look, if you're a fan, you should have high expectations. You should be overly optimistic about your team, regardless of what, you know, where they are. That's just the nature of it. But there seemed to be a real expectation within the Knicks organization that this team was pretty good, that this team had a shot at the playoffs, that it was legit. And they're kind of finding out now real quickly that, I mean, they've had some injuries and what have you, but they're finding out they're not. And there's a real disappointment that I think for a lot of people, when you looked at this team from the outside, said, man, this roster is ill-fitting. It's not that talented. It's going to be a rough season. But I don't think they saw it coming.
Two things. I agree with you on the ordering of the press conference. I mean, listen, this is a front office that hasn't spoken with the media, even in good times, yeah. You know, or you know, times when they have things to kind of crow about, as rare as that may be. They've kind of gone radio silent. Very few limited opportunities for the press to speak with those two individuals. So you would think that if any time they didn't want to speak, it would be on the heels of an embarrassing blowout loss to Cleveland at home. This is the second time in a week that they've been embarrassed by a subpar opponent on their home floor. And yes, I do think I agree with you that they certainly, you fans obviously have high expectations, and coaches and the trainers and the secretaries in the organization obviously all hope for the best heading into the season. I certainly think there is some, you know, I think you're correct that they probably believed a little bit too strongly in the talent that they brought in. But I think, to be fair to them, their biggest issue, as much as the losses and the record speak volumes, it's the effort yeah. that the team is, or lack thereof, that the team has shown on a relatively consistent basis. You know, it's one thing to be 2-8, but to lose by 30 points to the Kings when they were 0-5, to get blown off the floor, be down by 20 points in the first quarter to the Cavs, and never come within 13 points in the second half. In a game that was kind of and you know, these are essentially must-win games, because believe it or not, this is the easy part of the Knicks' schedule. These next couple home games before they go on the road, I believe it's 11 straight teams they play starting November 20th that qualified for the postseason last year, and I think six of those games are on the road. So things could go from ugly to bad to really, really, really bad in short order here. But I think from a management standpoint, I think that's kind of what's been most surprising and probably most alarming, has been that you just get a sense that the team has come out dead and flat. Yeah. And that's just something you don't expect from a bad team early in the season that's talking a good game. We're similar to the 90s Knicks. We're dogs. And they've kind of laid down, and that's unacceptable.
I'm going to tie in from there. We got several questions on the Knicks, but the first one we got, I just want to jump in from the I'm going to guess that this guy's a little biased. It's Fire Steve Mills at Nico Greenbeard. When Steve Mills gets fired, who can the Knicks look to hire for the next president of basketball operations, GM? My follow-up to that really quickly, though, is Mills really going to be the fall guy, or is this seems to be aiming at Fizdale?
Yeah, I think, and as has been discussed, Woj talked about it, and some other plugged-in reporters have noted that it's kind of people ducking for cover right now. You get the sense that Dolan's unhappy and that, you know, he's looking to shake things up. And I think fairly or not, it's being seen as Fizdale, as Perry and Mills throwing Fizdale under the bus, or at least throwing some meat to the sharks while the vultures are circling, and that's a fair assessment. My kind of take is, and I wrote about this earlier this week, is that no one escapes blame here. Yeah. Yes, Mills and Perry, they provided the chef with very poor ingredients, too much of one thing, not enough, variety.
You mean power forwards?
Exactly. And even though those power forwards are versatile, some, Bobby Portis can play some center and Marcus Morris can play some small forward, and they needed to add some depth on the front line. I understand all that. But the players they added were inefficient offensive scorers. They were kind of role players that probably saw this as an opportunity to kind of be the man for a little while. And it's just been a bad fit. So that being said, the players that Mills, obviously things went off the rails once Kevin Durant, even before he decided to sign with Brooklyn, I think kind of the turning point, the pivot point in this whole thing is when his Achilles snapped in game five of the finals. Because if you listen to anybody that had an opinion that was in and around the league, it was seemed as almost an uncertainty that Durant was headed to New York. Whether that changed because of the Achilles injuries or whether these really plugged-in sources were way, way off, I guess it depends on how you want to look at it. But obviously, when Durant and Kyrie went to Brooklyn, they were in a really rough spot. I think they kind of probably panicked a little bit and wanted to get some semblance of we're moving in the right direction. And I think to a certain extent, they wanted to kind of follow the Brooklyn blueprint, where we make incremental increases in progress while also developing our young core. So the next time we go shopping for free agents, we don't have a 17-65 record. We have a 35-45, you know, something along those lines. We're in the mid 30s. We're a piece or two away. Come join us. So I think that was the Mills and Perry belief. So they assembled this roster that they thought would be competitive, not necessarily a winning team, you know, not necessarily an eighth seed, but maybe 30 wins, 35 wins, something in that neighborhood. On the other end of the spectrum, you have David Fizdale. He's been the coach for about 18 months now. And from where I sit, it's hard to see that he's established himself as a quality head coach. Yeah. I understand he's had very poor talent to work with. I don't put the 17-win season on him, you know, to a large extent. But they came in with more talent this year. And, you know, if you look at some of the kind of analytics and the things we can study, you know, the kind of X's and O's, it's hard to look at that picture and attach a grade, a passing grade for Fizdale, you know, in terms of, you know, pick and roll offense, they're near the bottom of the league. You know, in terms of cuts, you know, the NBA synergy data, they're one of the they're second to last in assists, and they run isolations. They're one of the top five teams in terms of total post-ups, but they don't have the Karl Anthony Towns or the Nikola Jokic's that other teams that run a lot of post-ups do. So even though he's had some poor ingredients to work with, the meal he's cooked up has really been disgusting, and I think he has to get some of that blame as well.
I'm with you on that. A couple of things here. I mean, I was watching that, or as much as I could stomach of that Cleveland game. And my first thought was, look, you're going against with Sexton and Garland and the guys they've got back. That's a terrible defensive backcourt. And if you go against Cleveland, you attack that in ways. They didn't. They really just didn't go at the obvious weakness of the other team. And that's been a thing for a while. I'll just say around the league with Fizdale, he has some really strong supporters. Remember when he got let go in Memphis? And LeBron James and Dwayne Wade. When he was an assistant with the Heat, he was beloved. That's not universal, both among players and really with front offices. I don't know that he's a head coach. Like, there's a lot of GMs who are kind of down on him as a head coaching prospect. And the other thing, by the way,
just real quick on that. I think that's one of the reasons he got hired, to be honest. I think the plan was Fizdale and Perry saw that outward, you know, that kind of gushing of support from really star players and thought that he would kind of be the selling, you know, he'd be the face of the guy giving the PowerPoint presentations, the Durants and the Irvings of the world. And that would, he would kind of seal a deal with them in that respect.
Yeah,
but that obviously.
Yeah. And I think, by the way, I think that's a good point. And it's also elite. I will say this, elite players see coaches as dispensable. Like, yes. They really do not get Popovich kind of the exception, but in general, they do not get recruited by the coach. Let's look. LeBron and Anthony Davis are playing for Luke Walton and now Frank Vogel. It was not the coaches, man. I will say this too. I just, from a source I really would trust on this, the Knicks on Durant and some of the summer stuff, I was just told the Knicks blew it. That they had their chance and it just didn't go their way. And I'm not going to get into a lot of the details of it, other to say that, like, somebody I trust really told me that. So you go from there. I think Fizdale could be in trouble, which leads to another question we got, and I forgot to write down the name of the person who put it in there, but will Mark Jackson be the next Knicks coach?
Yeah, I would be – Knicks fans, be careful what you wish for, because if you want Fizdale out and bring in Mark Jackson, that is not a step in the right direction. I don't think Mark Jackson is the guy that's going to lead this team forward. It makes some sense. He has New York roots, a beloved player at St. John's, obviously won Rookie of the Year for the Knicks, 1987, and is a respected point guard in the league. But there's just, you know, based on his days and his, you know, you talk about a lack of innovative offense when he was with the Warriors, even though it was quite a few years ago, it certainly didn't scream a guy that was, you know, on the cutting edge of basketball here. So I don't think that would be a smart decision for the Knicks. But with this franchise, it would, you know, it would make sense in the fact that it would be a popular among some fans, you know, kind of among the casual fans, the populace. It's a known name, you know, that might help sell tickets, et cetera. So it certainly can't be dismissed.
Yeah, it's a good PR move. You know, we'll see who else they would look at there. I mean, obviously Jason Kidd's name would come up. There would be others. And Jason Kidd, another guy known for his innovative offense. So
Exactly. Couldn't work with Giannis.
I'm not sure what direction they go, but it's sloppy and ugly. And like you said, they're about to head into the tough part of the schedule. So it's going to be a rough season. Start watching games of James Wiseman. Sorry, you're not going to get to watch games of James Wiseman. Cole Anthony's out there. Try some other guys.
Cole Anthony, yeah. You could fly out to Australia, watch some LaMelo Ball highlights.
I got to just say that I've heard some interesting things about him. Like, he's got a little bit of a quirky shot too.
Oh, yeah.
And there was some instant love because he was putting up some numbers in a league with men. And look, NBA players, not only Andrew Bogut came out of there, I'll use my own guy, Long Beach State's own James Ennis, man, to pump up Long Beach.
Yeah.
But hey, he went and played there a year, came back a much better player. Like, you can do that, but there was a gushing at first, and then they started really watching some stuff, and there's been more questions. So we'll see where that lands.
I think you're right on the money. I think he was, he's a little bit underrated just because of kind of the backlash against the triple B and all the kind of nonsense and his showboating 50 point, half court fadeaways, et cetera. And then he kind of played pretty good over his first, posted some decent statistics and shot relatively well from the floor. He's obviously shown some passing vision, which I didn't, just from watching the highlights that I wasn't right. But I think you're right. Now that hype has kind of exceeded his actual ability. And I think he'll start to kind of plummet back down to earth.
There was always a sense that he was up there with Lonzo as potentially like an NBA level player and stuff. But the number one pick type of thing, I think that's fading pretty fast. We'll see what. We're a long way from the draft. A lot of things can change. Tommy, you ready for some reader questions? Let's get we'll get off of the Knicks and on to some questions from readers. But the first one, we're going to stay in New York. Nico Ray, Animavestra, at Nico Ray 79. Is Kyrie like that hot stepsister that you want, but as soon as y'all get together, it gets messy fast? And my first thought is there, Nico. That is very specific. That is a very specific analogy. I'm kind of curious what's going on in your life with potential stepsisters.
That sounds like it hits kind of close to home for Nico there. I don't know about that.
I got my questions there. By the way, never had stepsisters, so I'm not even going to begin to comment on that one, that part of it. But I think we all get the general gist. I mean, the Nets are not off to the fastest start. I mean, what's your impression of Kyrie in the Nets so far?
It's coming into the season, I thought it was one of the more fascinating subplots, kind of storylines of the 2019-20 season. Was Kyrie kind of returning home to Brooklyn, even though he's not from Brooklyn, he's from New Jersey. That's kind of being the storyline. He's ready to kind of, lead as an alpha male, even though it didn't work out in Boston. I thought it was a very interesting I thought the Nets were in a very interesting position because if you have the chance to get Durant and kind of the price of admission is giving Kyrie Irving a max salary, it's a no-brainer. You have to do it. You don't ask too many questions. You don't overthink it. You just go ahead and do it. That being said, this is a guy that while talented and extremely clutch and he's played well in big games and he can carry you in a playoff series and he has arguably the best handle of anybody I've ever seen in my entire life. He's a guy that not only is injury prone, and it sounds like he's dealing with the shoulder injury right now, is questionable for tonight's game. But that doesn't include the three surgeries on his knee and the hardware that he had to get replaced in his knee. He's also a guy that's just kind of a different dude, like a different character, a free thinker, so to speak. So it'll be very interesting to see. And I thought if they got off to kind of a rocky start, how would they handle it? Because remember, the Nets were the lovable underdogs last year. They were supposed to be the worst team for the next 50 years because they made the worst trade in sports history. But somehow they, tons of credit to Sean Marks and Kenny Atkinson for installing a culture and using their cap space the right way, renting it out and getting draft picks and nailing those draft picks with LeVert and Jared Allen in the 20s. And signing Spencer Dinwiddie off the trash heap and him turning into a good player. And they just kind of had that feel-good story last year where, wow, this team was supposed to be one of the worst teams in the league and they're sneaking into the playoffs and scaring playoff teams. And all of a sudden, they instead of, that natural progression from good to better to championship contender to really good, they went from underdog to, you know, championship favorite, you know, kind of overnight. Yeah, obviously, they're not a, you know, a true favorite this year with Durant sitting out the season. But that puts more responsibility and more pressure on Durant. So if they got rid of, you know, they got rid of the D'Angelo Russell and some other, you know, Jared Dudley, even though he was, you know, obviously not a key contributor statistically, was a big part of that piece. Ed Davis was an important part of the team. They just got rid of some guys that had played well and were comfortable in roles. Damari Carroll, another, for instance. And they, you know, they tried to microwave the winning process. And sometimes that can have some adverse effects. And I think we're starting to see it. LeVert's dinged up right now. He's going to miss a couple weeks with the thumb. We'll see if Kyrie can stay healthy. But they will be very interesting if the, you know, the losing starts to weigh on that team and the expectations are with the expectations as they are. How does Kyrie handle those questions day in, day out? As we know, it didn't go all that well in Boston.
No, it didn't. First off, a couple of things with them, too. The offense has actually been good.
Yes.
Like, they're scoring points. The offensively, and this is with Spencer Dinwiddie, who I, you know, coming into the year, I picked him as a preseason sixth man of the year, and he has not played up to that level at all. He's struggled. You mentioned the price of admission of bringing in Kevin Durant. It was Kyrie Irving. I would argue that the price of admission was 4 years, $40 million for DeAndre Jordan. And that's been the that one. I mean, at least they're starting Jared Allen. Jared Allen is so much better for them on the floor.
DeAndre Jordan has been a bad defender for years, and he's just getting exploited now.
Yeah.
Not to mention 3 years from now when he's making another $10 million.
Yeah. So you enjoy that contract for a while. That one was the that to me was the one. Brooklyn, though, I still think they're I still think they're going to be able to play a little bit better defense. The other part of this, though, and you mentioned the. To me, what was the most interesting thing to watch this year, they had built a culture of hard work. They had built a culture of doing, you know, doing things their way, a Nets way that was a little bit different. And it really worked for them. They got guys who fit with that. And Dinwiddie bought in and Caris LeVert bought in and Jared Allen. And they had these kind of grinding, gritty guys. They went and got two superstars who do things their way. And you always have to bend the culture to superstars a little. And, you know, certain organizations, the Lakers have done that for years. The Clippers took a different route this year, right? Like, they built a gritty, tough Patrick Beverley-based, you know, Patrick Beverley, Montrezl Harrell-based culture. Then they went and got two superstars in Kawhi Leonard and Paul George, who are lunch pail guys, who are, you know, not number one picks. They've got, obviously, Kawhi in particular, he's got some quirks and some things he wants to do and some ways he wants things done. And we'll get into that a little bit more in another question. But it at least makes – there was a real logical fit sense. You're really having to adjust your culture to adjust to Kyrie Irving. And I think that there's just some of that going on too, that everybody's trying to get on the same page there.
I think that's a really good point because the Nets were one of the very rare teams in the NBA where they didn't have a true – where they were a good team, but they didn't have a true superstar. It was almost like the face of the franchise was kind of the Marks Atkinson culture. You know, that was the front. That was kind of the, you know, the emblem of the team. You know, obviously Russell had a great year, became an all-star, and, you know, they had some other pieces that were all – but it was all part of this collective, and everyone kind of fit under the same umbrella. And when you get a kind of diva-ish player like Kyrie Irving, well, there were already some rumblings that he didn't want to practice one day and didn't want to be photographed. And there's just – in the past, you know, Atkinson could probably have said, get out of my gym, but you can't do that with the Durants and the Irvings of the world. So to your point, it's a very interesting, you know, they'll walk that tightrope and figure that out.
And they've got some time. Again, they don't have Durant this year. The pressure isn't really on them because I think we all kind of saw them as probably a first round and out. Maybe they can make it to the second round kind of team going into this season. And they're, you know, look, we're 10 games in. They're in the mix for one of those playoff spots. And I still expect that they would get one. We'll just see how that shakes out long term for them.
Right.
All right, let's move on to the next question. It's actually a two-parter from the Sawyer and Sal Show, at the Sawyer and Sal Show, or Sawyer and Sal Show. Question number one, Tommy, how you doing? How you been?
I'm good. Are they going to ask about any relative stepsisters or stepmoms or anything like that?
Apparently, they have had no weird family relations, at least that we know of.
I'm doing good.
Okay. Yeah. Exactly. And by the way, it's one of those things where I'm like, people ask you that all. Hey, how you doing? I'm like, ask me about my work, and I'm like, are there things I can complain about at my job? Of course there are. Every job. Dude, we cover the NBA for a living, man. I work in a candy store. At the end of the day, it's not going to be that bad. We'll get on to their actual question, which is another interesting one. Question number two with them. I think we all know what we're seeing with Luka Doncic this season, which, by the way, it's like they didn't say this. I'm like, that's borderline MVP level play.
Yep.
But what are your feelings about Kristaps Porzingis in their first 10 games, Tommy?
Yeah, the KP scenario, obviously, the Porzingis situation. I'm headed to the Garden in a few hours, actually. Porzingis is making his way to they're obviously playing the Knicks Thursday night on a nationally televised game. So there'll be a lot of excitement and energy in the building tonight. Listen, KP struggled a little bit his first 10 games. I tweeted it out yesterday or the other day. He's the only player in the league averaging over 15 field goal attempts while shooting 40% or worse and below 70% from the free throw line. You know, he's always been a relatively inefficient offensive player, dynamic in the fact that he can, but he's also one of the only two players in the league to average 18, 7, and 2 blocks. You know, one of the only players in the league to average 2 blocks and 2 3-pointers, which speaks to kind of his unicornian abilities. But that being said, the Mavericks, if you look at the on-off analytics, are a much, much better team when Kristaps Porzingis is on the bench. He has the worst plus-minus on the team. They score about 125 points per 100 possessions when he is off the floor, only about 105 points per 100 possessions when he was on the court. Overall, they're about 8 points better when he's not on the floor. That being said, it's only a matter of time before he kind of works off that rust and shows flashes of the brilliant generational talent that he is. So in answer to that first question, I think it all comes down to his health. You know, can he stay healthy? If so, I don't have much doubt that he'll develop into a legitimate top 25-ish player and a true superstar in the league, and him and Luka will be a dynamic duo force to contend with. However, that's a big if this guy can stay healthy. Because remember, it wasn't just the ACL injury. This was during his first three seasons with the Knicks, had ankle issues, had an elbow issue. He's been this is his fifth NBA season. Kristaps Porzingis has played one game in April in his entire career. Not just the playoffs, just one game past March in his entire NBA career. And this is his fifth season. So he needs to prove he can stay healthy in order to, for Mavericks fans, legitimately believe that he can kind of be the foundational building block that can take him and turn them into championship contenders.
Yeah, I think, to be fair, we have to say this. He missed 19 months of basketball. He's played 9 games. It's way too early to make a really solid judgment on him. You mentioned this, though, and I think it's important. A lot of the hype in New York was about what he could be because he hadn't yet become efficient. He was dealing with injuries. He wasn't really you could see what he could be, but he hadn't gotten there yet. Dallas has to get him there. And again, this was always going to take a little bit of time. He missed so much time. But he's got to become more efficient of a scorer and playmaker and stuff, or it's not going to work. I mean, look, this is Luka Doncic's team. Don't get me wrong. He has been unbelievable this year. And like quietly into that. It's way too early to discuss postseason awards of any kind, even though we're going to keep doing that. But he's at least got to – you have to put him on a watch list. Though he's been like that good for MVP. He's been that good this season. We'll see if he's – go ahead.
He's been so incredibly good. And I think that really, really benefits Porzingis because I think the issue kind of long-term in New York was he's not suited to kind of be the alpha male. He's a perfect second banana, you know, because on the night-in-night-out basis. And I don't know if there's remember, Luka hasn't even turned 21 yet. So that's just a scary proposition. So to see those two guys develop together is, as a Maverick fan, you got to be insanely excited.
Yeah, and there's some other nice pieces there. Like this is a team that's like, I kind of like how they're constructed. Maxi Kleber has played well. Guys like Dale Enright and Jalen Brunson. And look, J.J. Barea is always entertaining and is making plays for them. He's only been in one game. But, I mean, Tim Hardaway's out there getting some buckets. You can put some pieces around them that make this work. But they're not a bad team. Like they started off fairly fast. Again, really elite offense behind Luka. If the defense can catch up a little bit, they can potentially be a playoff team in the West. But I think, with Porzingis, for me personally, it's just I'll have a better feel of what I think about him when we get a little farther into the season. It's been a bit of a rough start, but I also just kind of expected a rough start. So,
yeah, I mean, as you point out, it was 610 days from the time he tore his ACL in the Garden that night against Milwaukee to opening night when he took his first shot. So you gotta cut the guy some slack.
Yeah, exactly. We got to. Next question from Alfredo Rodriguez, which was an email question. You can always email the podcast with questions or comments at pbtpodcast@gmail.com. That's PBT as in Pro Basketball Talk, podcast@gmail.com. Alfredo Rodriguez, a regular listener of the podcast who's sent us questions before, had a long one. I'm going to tighten it up a little bit just for the point of the question, but he said, Lob City was showtime. It was billboards and commercials and highlight reels and hypes. The Kawhi Leonard Clippers are silent. No noise, no drama, no highlights. Are the Clippers basically the new Spurs? Are they similar to the Duncan era Spurs in that way? By the way, I'm just going to say, as somebody out here in LA, I don't think it's necessarily that way. There are billboards all over this city taking direct aim at the Lakers. You know, the kind of grit over glitz type of stuff that there are variants of all over town. They're never going to be the hype of the Lakers, but they're filling up the building, and it's pretty loud for Clipper games right now. Like there is a fan base that has latched onto this team.
Absolutely, and deservedly so, because they have every reason to believe that they will be hoisting the Larry O'Brien Trophy in about 7 or 8 months from now. They are that talented. From you can see it even when Kawhi sits out, that the amount of depth they have defensively, obviously, with George and Leonard and Pat Beverly is kind of the focal point of your defensive attack. Nobody wants to go against that. Although, according to Russell Westbrook, Pat Beverly is overrated.
By the way, the best part of that is, the ESPN had to put up their tracking stats on that just because he said that. And Westbrook was over six, I think it was. Yeah, whatever it was. I guess.
Yeah. So, yes. So, I think I get the sense that Westbrook may not be the most independent, subjective opinion of I think it's, there certainly is. You can make a correlation, a comparison between the Clippers and the Duncan era Spurs. What's interesting is the fact that, there's a lot of talk about, load management, et cetera.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. So,
but one of the interesting thing is the reality is that it kind of started with Tim Duncan and Greg Popovich in San Antonio. We're the infamous DMP old that Popovich used a few years ago. He's one of the, you wouldn't think it, a kind of a gruff, hard nosed, and Popovich obviously has that that reputation, but he's actually done a good job. He was one of the kind of the innovators of that whole strategy. We got an older team. Let's keep them fresh for the playoffs, and because that's what matters most.
Yeah, exactly. And it's expanded from there. I'm going to ask you more about this. I've written about this a couple times in the last few days, and I have. And talked about it on podcasts and on radio interviews where the science is really clear. Ultimately, there needs to be fewer NBA games, but it's bigger than that.
Yes.
It's talking about a restructuring of how AAU works, frankly, in terms of these tournaments where LeBron is talking about, Bronny and his other younger son, whose name suddenly skipped, but like they go to a tournament and they're like, hey, we got 5 games today. No, that's a horrible idea. Yeah. And I've got a daughter. I have 2 daughters, really, but 1 daughter who plays at a fairly high level of youth soccer. And we get tournaments where there's 2 games in a day and up to 4 on a weekend, maybe 5, 3. If it's a 3-day weekend, you could get a 5th game in. That's a strain on these girls. You can start to see the wear on them by the end, and you're like, man, I hope that those fatigued muscles, you're watching it thinking, I don't want my daughter tearing an ACL or getting hurt, because you can see the fatigue in their, these are 13-year-old girls who are like, yeah, I'm ready to go to bed, like early. They're just worn out.
Right.
And then, fortunately, we've got a coach who's like, all right, after a tournament like that, we're taking some time off, do some recovery. Like, really, if we practice, it's a walkthrough type of thing. We're not doing physical stuff, and kind of gets it. But I think parents have to manage that kind of stuff too. And that's a whole sidelight, but we're talking about a restructuring of sort of how AU is and all the way through to keep some of this stuff. So you don't end up, Baxter Holmes had a great example of with the story he did on this a couple, you know, on the young players that he had over, you know, over the summer. There's a great story. You can find it from Baxter Holmes at ESPN about the problems with guys. By the time they get to the league, they've got all sorts of things that require load management because of all the games they'd played in their youth. And he's talking about Julius Randle losing his whole rookie year on a play where he went up to dunk and he landed. That's it. Nobody touched him, nothing. And he shattered his leg because of wear and tear over the years. It wasn't, you know, it's just the issues are bigger than just the NBA, but I just, the science says you've kind of got to, you've got to handle this, especially if you've got somebody like Kawhi Leonard. What was, Tommy, you saw by the end of the finals, man, he was dragging those legs between the knee and the quad. He was starting to show the wear and tear of just the playoffs.
100%. And listen, I mean that, and it's funny because a lot of times players will get criticized if they don't perform well in the postseason, you know, right? That's the rings culture. You know, it doesn't matter if you have bad teammates and your team doesn't advance far in the postseason. If you don't win a title, you stink, yada, yada, yada. But at the same time, so when players rest to perform at their best in the postseason, as Kawhi Leonard did, he didn't take a night off in the postseason. He averaged over 39 minutes a game in the playoffs and carried the Raptors to their first title. You know, the Raptors laid a blueprint. You know, let's focus on the big picture here. I understand it's not fair to the fans. I understand they're going to be upset. But at the same time, that's not, you know, Nick Nurse's, you know, he can't worry about, you know, 5 years from now when Adam Silver renegotiates the contract with ESPN and TNT, et cetera. He's got to worry about winning a championship this season, you know, and what helps the team is Kawhi taking a day off, you know, same with Doc Rivers, Kawhi Leonard, you know, getting rest during the season. And also you want to keep these guys around and have them re-sign contracts, et cetera. And the thing that bothers me is the knock that these players are quote unquote soft. Because they want night off, or their coaches are instructing them that they're not playing this evening. You know, if you presented this information that we now have to the Larry Bird, who walks with a limp,
yep.
You know, and all these other players that were so tough that didn't know what they were doing, you know, thank God it's not as bad as the NFL with the CTE. But now that we have the information that these players that what they want to pick up their grandchildren and take them to a park, you know, it's just playing 82 games, that marathon schedule and grinding out every night is just, you know, there's some freaks of nature, the Karl Malones, the John Stocktons that can get away with it. But the majority of human beings and human athletes simply cannot take that wear and tear. And now we have the science. It's not a guesstimate. It's not a, hey, this seems like a lot of games. There's actual physical data that informs us that this is not the right way to handle the situation.
No, and there is a growing amount of data across multiple sports about the impact of injuries and the level of play. The NBA will be happy to tell you, like, teams on the second night of a back-to-back just don't play as well. They don't shoot as well. So there's a lot to it. It's not really going away. I still think ultimately you're going to see the league try to reduce to like 70 games, but that's a whole nother podcast. I mean, that is a complex financial issue. I wanted to ask you this for people who don't know. Tom also does a lot of writing for fantasy stuff for RotoWorld for NBC. When you're dealing with your fantasy team, how do you handle load management? Do you just have to look ahead and say, oh, this looks like a game Kawhi could sit?
Yeah, it's certainly one of those situations when you're setting your lineup week to week, and even during the draft, you kind of have to pencil in Kawhi Leonard for missing, you know, 15 games due to load management. But I think it almost hurts Kawhi less because so many other players and so many other teams are rightfully so kind of adopting a similar philosophy. You know, even the younger players. We've seen Ja Morant, for instance, in Memphis. They've rested Brandon Clark and Morant the second night of a back-to-back, their first back-to-back of the season. We'll see if they kind of do that going forward. But again, Morant played a ton of minutes at Murray State, was coming off a knee surgery. He's obviously an explosive, you know, incredible athlete, but he weighs probably, a buck 90. So it's difficult to, you know, run through screens and deal with these professional, you know, as a 19-year-old kid dealing with, you know, 28-year-old grown men on a night in, night out basis. You know, they're going to have him, you know, try to punish him whenever he comes into the paint. I just think it's one of those situations from a fantasy perspective where you got obviously going to be cognizant of it. But it's not like Kawhi Leonard's the only player you have to avoid. You just kind of, you know, I'll plug RotoWorld. You got to update your browser on a daily basis, multiple times a day to figure out who's actually active for that night's game, and make sure you set your lineup accordingly.
Yeah, exactly. Especially for daily fantasy, it's a little easier sometimes. I'll say this if you're trying to do your weekly stuff. The Clippers are prioritizing in those back-to-backs wins The games they know they can win. Like, to use the example of everybody's talking about, oh, I wanted to see him against Giannis Antetokounmpo and the Bucks. Well, the Bucks are really good, and if Kawhi plays against the Bucks, maybe the Clippers win. Yeah. But that's a tough one. Or they could play him against a struggling Portland team, who, by the way, is in conference. So, like, the tiebreakers and the seeding stuff matters more. But if we play him against that team, we're way more likely to win. And they're prioritizing getting the sure thing win rather than kind of trying to, I don't know if you call it maximize wins. Like, hey, maybe we could win both of these. That's not really how they're doing it. When they're making these decisions, it's about doing both. Although they've become interesting now. I think you just start to stagger the rest between Paul George and Kawhi Leonard, right?
Yep.
So Doc's smart about this, but Doc's also coached a championship team, and he knows everybody in that organization to a man knows what they're doing. And I was on the radio the other day, and they're like, hey, what do you say to the fans who, you know, bought tickets for this game and are mad because they don't get to see Kawhi Leonard? I'm like, if you're a Clipper fan, go find a Raptor fan and ask them if they'd trade those 22 games in the regular season for the title.
100% This is a big picture thing. Exactly. If I'm a Clippers fan, you know, yes, I'd love to see Kawhi, but I'd love to see Kawhi in a championship parade more than a regular season game in November.
Absolutely. One last question from Swaggy M, Mr. Pure Intensity. This is kind of an interesting one. It's talking Celtics lineup. Is Thomas Bryant, who's playing for the Wizards right now, is Thomas Bryant a good fit for the Celtics? And if so, could they, you know, what kind of package would be put together to trade for him? Boston is obviously, look, and I think you and I said this before the season. It's like, I always thought Kemba Walker could fill in admirably for, he doesn't do everything. Kyrie Irving is a better player on the court. Chemistry and all that stuff maybe makes up for it. They were going to miss Al Horford and Aaron Baines. Yeah. And by the way, Baines is absolutely phenomenal for Phoenix right now. As the way he's playing for DeAndre Ayton. They miss it at the five. There's a lot of talk about trying to fill in that spot. But I'm not sure Thomas Bryant is really the answer.
I agree with you. But at the same time, they do need a defensive big. I think that's something that's going to eventually really catch up to them. Obviously, they're scorching hot right now. And in the regular season, they'll win enough games where it won't be a major issue. They'll score enough points, et cetera. But in a half court, grinded out, second round of the Eastern Conference playoffs, if you have Enes Kanter you know, on the floor for long stretches, as Billy Donovan infamously once said, can't play Kanter, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
And yes, he did play well for Portland in the postseason. I will give him credit, but it's a little different style going on there out west. So I think at some point they're going to need, you know, whether that's, you know, a trade or you know, somebody gets bought out after the trade deadline, something along those lines. I think they do need to supplement the depth in the lineup because already Robert Williams is dinged up. Daniel Tice is dinged up. Kanter missed 7 or 8 games with his knee issue. Will he be able to stay healthy? That's certainly an issue that they are going to have to address sooner or later.
They are. I can tell you right now, Hassan Whiteside's available if you're interested. Shouldn't be interested.
What do you make of the Blazers? There's some worrisome signs going on there with that.
Very
with that
worrisome. Right look, it's a couple things. I mean, part of it is, look, Damian Lillard has been unbelievable. But, I mean, the perfect example is against the Nets when he dropped 60 and they still lose. Like, this is – it's become a one-man show there. I'm not really worried about C.J. McCollum turning it around. Like, he's had a slow start to the season. Yeah, he's fine.
Yes.
And their guard play will be fine. Yes. But, you know, you're not going to get –
he's a nice little piece they have too, Anthony Simons.
Yes, exactly. And they've got – so I think some of that stuff fits together. It's just – it is a black hole in the middle. And and Yusuf Nurkic, I think people don't even realize, he was big body, played some smart defense. He was such a good playmaker for them last year. They were able to get him the ball at the nail or at the elbow and let him create. And it just, he was a really smart player. He's not getting back till All-Star break-ish, give or take. Nobody's exactly sure, but what I keep hearing. And if we're talking that, he's still not going to be, I mean, maybe he's right for the playoffs, maybe, but it's they're struggling to make the playoffs at that point. Yeah. They've got to find I would say, you know, Hassan Whiteside, I get what they were thinking, but it's just a poor fit in the very basic sense of what Nurkic provided them on one level was what Rudy Gobert will and Mike Conley are starting to do better with in Utah. He's such a huge pick. And then he rolls and he's got soft hands and he can make plays, but he sets your pick and roll guards up with huge picks that create some space for them. Whiteside's not a good pick setter. He's genuinely bad at it.
He whips on screens almost every time he goes out the top of the key.
Yeah, and because of that, they're just not – Lillard's still able to create some space. I think it's been an adjustment for McCollum. Like I said, I think he's just slumping a little bit to start the season. But I just – I'm not sure where you go. I don't know who becomes available that, you know is out there. But it's just kind of weird to think that they picked up Hassan Whiteside, and you're like, yeah, would they have been better off with Dwight Howard? Because he looks pretty good setting picks and rolling right now.
It's true. And obviously they were hoping that Zach Collins would kind of take a leap, you know, and then him going down and being out for at least 4 months really, really devastated an already limited depth chart. I think, you know, obviously December 15th is when all the free agents that got signed will be able to, they'll be able to be moved in trades. Listen, I know a team in New York that has an excess of power forward depth.
Yes, they need fours, desperately needed fours who can space the floor. The name you keep hearing, by the way, I mean, yeah, first off, Kevin Love's name is at the top of everybody's list. There's so much money on that deal that I'm not sure even Portlander does it. I mean, this is the first year of the 400, four years, $120 million. The name everybody, if you ask me who is the guy most guaranteed to be traded before the deadline, Danilo Gallinari.
Right.
If providing he's still healthy, he provides the shooting, the depth, plays, you know, look, he was really good with the Clippers last year.
Yeah.
Was a lot of the reason they did make the playoffs. And you can plug and play him in Portland or a few other places.
Definitely.
They're going to need some rim protection. That's something certainly Danilo's a stretch for, who doesn't do that. But I could see him as a fit. One way or another, if you made me bet, there's zero chance Gallinari's with the Thunder at the end of the season.
Totally agree with you. It makes no sense for the player or the team to be in Oklahoma City.
No, I don't know that they're going to be able to move Chris Paul
right.
in the short term as much as – and he, by the way, he's playing pretty well.
He is.
But I just don't, again, it's too much money on the deal right now. There's just got to be fewer years on that.
Because
Chris Paul is not going to take a discount for you.
Agreed.
He is getting every dollar of that. And, hey, more power to him.
Absolutely. I think one player that, just from a Knicks perspective, I think that Bobby Portis might be a guy that they would dangle towards Portland and try to.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Knicks, you know, he has, as a player, a team option for his contract next season. So he's essentially a expiring contract. He rebounds a little bit, is a poor defender. But again, can kind of, you know, space the floor, shot around 40% from three over the second half of last season. Hasn't been quite as accurate this season with New York, but, I don't think New York would ask for a lot back. It would clear out some minutes to allow Kevin Knox some more playing time and Mitchell Robinson. So they actually might be, you know, those two teams might be able to discuss a deal at some point in the winter.
That makes some sense too. So, yeah, I'm not sure. I think a lot of these people, the Celtics, are going to lean in. They don't really need to stretch four as much. They've actually gotten away with it because of the way they haven't missed Horford in the regular season much or Baines in the bigs, just because Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum have been good. I mean, they're playing with a comfort level again, and they can kind of get away with it. But at some point, you're right. They need to go find a defensive big.
Yep. Absolutely.
All right, Tommy, thanks for doing this, man. Thanks for stepping in. Where can everybody find your work out on social media and everywhere else?
Yeah, at Tommy Beer on Twitter. You can find me there. Any questions you might have, the direct messages are open, and all the links to my work, et cetera, are at Tommy Beer on Twitter.
All right, Tommy, it's great. I look forward to having you back on. When the Knicks prove us wrong with a 16-game winning streak that vaults them to the top of the East, I will have you back on, and we'll discuss what idiots we are.
You'll have me back on then? Okay, so I'll never talk to you again, Kurt. It's been nice knowing you. You have a great life, and it'd be good.
All right, and thank you, everybody, for listening. One way or another, with Tommy or without, we will be back next week with another edition of the Pro Basketball Talk podcast here at NBC Sports.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
When you need need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.